The Afterlife podcast employs dark humor and frank language. It is intended for a mature audience. You are listening to the Afterlife Podcast. Thank you for joining me for episode 18, Champagne for My Real Friends. Do you forgive and forget? I don't. I forget to forgive. It's easier that way. If I don't think about it, does it exist? No. Because everything we experience is an effect of the mind. When we remember something, it exists only in our remembering of it. If I don't remember it, it's not happening. No past and no future exists outside of this present moment in which we remember or choose to forget. How do you deal with forgiveness when it comes to irreconcilable differences? Forgive and forget? Or do you forget to forgive? Wouldn't you prefer the sunshine of the spotless mind? I would. If offered the chance to hook up my brain to a machine or take a pill to completely forget all the people and situations that caused me emotional suffering, I'd jump at the chance. But only if I could have a guarantee that I'd never see those people again. Because wouldn't it be a tired old joke to keep repeating the same old cycles time after time? For those who choose to hold on to personal history's past, that may be all life seems to have on offer. But this is a choice. But Maximilian, some people have committed acts against me and have done horrible, terrible, horrendously unforgivable things. Listen, friend, I know they have. Each of us plays the asshole to somebody sometime. Anything only has what meaning we give it. That, too, is a choice. One none can choose for you, but you. Where forgiveness isn't possible or practical, we can choose to forget. And in the absence of unpleasant memories, in the freshness of the present moment, uncluttered by sad stories of mistakes, missteps, misadventure, and guilt over our own transgressions against others, we set ourselves free. Follow me. Afterlife. Now here. For a reason that was at first not apparent, Karen found herself standing alone in a bar, thinking of a childhood friend named Pravana Blevins, a third and fourth grade playmate from her years growing up in the Midwest. Until Karen and her mom had moved back to California, Pravana's mother, Maia, held the gold medal for being the most beautiful woman Karen had ever seen, aside from her own mother. Maia had jet black hair, cut into a forward-slanting bob, an olive complexion, a beauty mark beneath her left eye, and one above her lip. Karen saw Maia every day, since Maia's daughter was her best friend, and they lived at opposite ends of the same floor of a massive apartment building. One summer afternoon, Karen had jumped off their second-story balcony. Luckily, she hadn't broken anything, but she had knocked the wind out of herself as her legs buckled and her knees slammed into her chest. Recalling her childhood misadventure, she thought it would be entertaining if she could remember the story she'd made up to tell her mother, the one that explained how she'd locked herself out without her keys. It couldn't have been any good. Her mother had let that one slide, probably because, to her mother, the idea that Karen would jump off a second-story balcony was too improbable a solution. Recognizing the instant she landed and lay gasping in the grass like a boat-bottom trout that she'd done something very stupid, Karen's first inclination was to undo what she'd done. So, in an attempt to undo her actions with words, Karen had lied. She told no one about the jump, which had hurt at the end, but had still been worth it. And so she was able to tell no one about her victory of cheating death. She didn't even tell Pravana. Pravana was her first real friend outside of school. Karen went to private school then, and Pravana, who attended public school, was her best friend from her apartment building. Typically, Karen got home before Pravana. Enough time to change out of her uniform, house rules, and into her jean shorts, some surf brand t-shirt, some scuffed-up penny loafers. About 4 o'clock, she'd sprint at top speed down the long, empty hall. Most times, Pravana would fling open the door, and Karen would whoosh in, sucking along a gust of air in her wake. Maia was always home, dressed in her floor-length robe. Karen couldn't say that it was always the same one, but they, more or less, were all the same. Floor-length, flattering, tied with a sash. Knowing all she knew now, Karen could say that Maia was most likely suffering from major depressive disorder. Probably recently divorced. The topic of dads had never come up. Karen didn't have a dad around, and Pravana never mentioned where hers was. There was never a man around, just an ex-supermodel in her fancy bathrobe looking tired. Maia would play along with Pravana and Karen if they deigned to include her in their games, but otherwise she left the two girls to entertain themselves as they wished, allowing them full run of the apartment, even her bedroom, which in Karen's world was an absurdity. At Karen's house, her mother's bedroom, unless her mother was in it and open to Karen's company, was strictly museum status. Look and dare to dream, but don't touch. Don't even sniff it. Karen never felt this was a slight, however. Karen's mother's bedroom was a sophisticated affair that featured a queen-sized bed, real silk sheets, and Euro pillows stuffed into shams with velvet the color of ripe pomegranates on one side and ivory quilted silk on the other. Karen's mother had 2 telephones in her bedroom, a genuine princess phone and a modern version of it in ivory with smooth lines instead of the fussy flourishes of silver and gold like the other. It had a push-button keypad that had the appearance of rotary. When Karen's mom was in the shower or cooking, Karen would pick up the receiver and pretend she was talking, but only for a few seconds. Karen really didn't think her mother would mind, but just in case. Pravana's mother had nothing of interest in her room and no fancy things. Her bedroom was also the room in the apartment furthest away from the television in front of which Maia seemed to spend most of her time. Though she left them mainly to themselves, she did look after the girls, sometimes making them snacks or some little sampling of whatever she was making for dinner. It was Maia who Karen had to thank for her own obsession with agvo limado soup. The first time Maia had made it, Karen had eaten 6 bowls in a single sitting. Maia was amazed. Pravana either didn't like agvo limado soup much or had become sick of it, so her mother was surprised at Karen's enthusiasm for a dish that her own mother, still alive in Greece, had taught her to make. Karen's gluttony was shameless. Maia was flattered. Pravana was amused. And here Pravana was, looking amused again, smiling her slightly rabbit-toothed smile at some guy with a kilt on. Karen wondered what the man was wearing underneath. He had well-formed, meaty glutes, which he flexed, bouncing one and then the other in quick succession. Mesmerizing. Pravana lifted a martini glass in Karen's direction. It was hard for Karen to tear her eyes away from the man's butt convulsions, but Kilt Man stopped making his cakes bounce, and Karen, though not with much grace, was able to tear her eyes away from a thirst trap. Karen met Pravana's gaze. Pravana sauntered over, looking amazing, wearing a floor-length dress decorated in mandalas done in bright coral, pink, and purple. Emilio Pucci. Stunning. And her hair. It seemed to exude wisps of sunlight in delicate tendrils like incense left to burn in a room where the air stood still. As a person who had slightly more than a casual interest in the paranormal, Karen had read books and seen documentaries in which people who'd had a near-death experience consistently shared accounts of grandparents and favorite aunts drawing up the welcome wagon in the afterlife. Karen's eyes searched the room. Who else was in here? Aside from her childhood friend, Karen didn't recognize anybody. Perhaps, Karen thought, it's just a happy coincidence. Pravana certainly looked different from when they were apartment-building playmates. She looked to be in her 30s, probably. Aside from the surprise of seeing someone from a long time ago unexpectedly, nothing else about the situation seemed suspicious. Except for the manner in which Karen had come to be standing in a bar she'd never been to before without her purse, or at least her iPhone and car keys. But aside from Pravana, Karen didn't see anyone else she even kind of used to know. Not one familiar face. Except, maybe, for one. Positioned in a triumvirate, on the opposite side of a gigantic egg-shaped cocktail bar cut from a solid piece of amethyst, she spied not just one, but another three people who she definitely knew. People who she knew didn't know, couldn't know, each other. They all turned to look at her in unison. Karen waved, weakly. Damn. Karen wondered what she had to do to get a drink. Pravana arrived at Karen's side. Pravana! Karen! She sang, beaming. I was just wondering how you've been. I'm dead, right? Right. I guess you're dead too. We aren't dead. We're just less there and more here now. Pravana's hair lights flickered as she threw back her head to give Karen a wide smile. Suddenly, Pravana was smiling at Karen from across the space again. She laughed with butt cheek, man. It was as if she never left his side, yet Karen knew she had. Karen remembered seeing the swirling lights in Pravana's hair up close, which, from across the room, she wouldn't have been able to recall so vividly. Karen wondered aloud who she had to kill to get a drink. As the answer dawned on her, a dark-haired man who looked vaguely familiar stood patiently at her side. His smile was open. Karen cocked her head in an attempt to retrieve his identity from the interwebs of her mind. "Can I get you something? I'm Charlie." Karen tried not to show him her struggle to place him, but she sensed his bemusement and knew that her face, the traitor, had betrayed her faulty memory. His face was alarmingly beautiful. Two huge lagoon eyes squinted at her as if in an effort to contain their amusement from beneath pale brown eyelashes that reminded Karen of a pair of butterflies at rest. She knew this man. Without warning, they exploded into simultaneous laughter at a remembrance of something more tragic than funny. He was her brother. Another lifetime ago, Charlie and Karen had been twins, identical. There had been more than just the two of them, however. There had been a third sibling. Neither Charlie nor Karen could remember his name at first. Then it dawned on them. The spare, that's what they called him, hadn't had one. Just a one-of thing, perhaps. Or the foundation for some joint endeavor in the future was what they figured, since they hadn't crossed paths with the spare since losing him to the vanishing. Karen wondered how long it had been since she'd seen Charlie. Not wanting to crush the mood, instead of asking him outright, Karen decided to try to guess how long ago it was they were siblings. Karen started with his shoes. Pale gray suede. Or was it leather? It was too creamy a texture to say. Expensive. Handmade. That means, thought Karen, that they had been rich. Charlie had both hands in his pockets. His eyes twinkled tauntingly. Karen got the feeling they'd played this game many times before. Karen, he smiled disarmingly. How is it you never remember me if we spend more than a lifetime apart? Karen shrugged and answered him in Italian. Search me. There's a clue. Another man joined them. Charlie's expression darkened. How is it she still doesn't have a drink, Charlie? You know she wants one. He turned to Karen. What'll you have? Karen tried to remember the name and vintage of the most expensive champagne known to man. The best she could do was a 2003 Clos du Mesnil. At the bar, the new guy and Charlie watched with rapt attention as Karen indulged fully in the joy of the grape. The sensation of the tiny money bubbles ripped across her tongue like a chain of firecrackers. Her mouth and neck vibrated with pleasure as the happy bubbles dropped in on the party in the depths of her throat. It made Karen want to purr. Then the new guy introduced himself as Charlie. We're both Charlie, they explained. The new guy, the second Charlie, new Charlie, looked directly into Karen's eyes. Her heart skipped a beat, but not in a good way. Karen excused herself to the bar, leaving aristocrat Charlie in his own bad company. Hello. Now there's a face she knew, the bartender. Of course. Suffice it to say, she'd been in enough bars in enough cities enough times that it only made sense that here too, Karen should know the person slinging the drinks. Hello, Jason. Sugar plum? Jason's Hoosier accent always came as a surprise, no matter how often she heard him speak. So often people's voices didn't match Karen's idea of what she'd expected a person to be, based on what she thought she could infer from her initial impressions of their appearance. Karen bellied up to the bar, leaning her folded arms on the counter. Jason bent his massive frame across the bar and kissed her on the tip of her nose. Panda, Karen cooed. I can't say I'm glad to see you here. I thought you were fine. I just talked to you, like today. Little girl, no, you didn't. You just think that you did. But you don't worry your pretty little head about it. Everything is just fine. You've been here for a while. You just don't know it. I've been here 25 minutes at the most, Karen insisted. He cackled. Then he reached up into the air and pulled a string attached to a bell. Everybody turned around to look at them, then laughed. Aristocrat Charlie leaned into the bar on Karen's right. So, what are your plans? Am I supposed to already be making plans? Despite what the bartender says, she shot a look in Jason's direction. I feel like I just got here. I don't have any ideas, except for another something else to drink. He'll serve you up whatever you want, said Aristocrat Charlie, nodding in the bartender's direction. Just ask. She wanted something different than the last drink she'd had. That first glass of bubbly, a vintage she'd never had before, but remembered from some issue of Wine Enthusiast magazine, had opened new pathways in her mind. She physically felt it happening. It was a fresh, but not entirely unfamiliar emotion. Friskiness. She wanted to feel it again. 98, Claude Abonné. Karen blurted out. She didn't know where the words had come from. The bartender nodded and sat down, a flute of champagne a color she'd never seen before. Well, don't look at me with those question marks in your eyes. You ordered it, Missy. Charlie said nothing, but Jason set him up with a scotch, the deep amber of honey, almost red. As Charlie raised his glass in a toast, Karen could smell the citrus, coffee and apple fragrance of the elixir in his hand. What can I say? Sorry I've been away? What a sham that would be. Us lying together, this way and that way, our spirits chain smoking. We burn the candle at both ends. An elegant woman in a grass skirt appeared behind Aristocrat Charlie. The woman had brown skin, tattoos on her face, and long, dark hair. Her bare breasts bounced as she walked toward them, barefoot. Karen's aristocrat brother followed her gaze to see what she was staring at. Once he saw the mystery woman, he turned back around to Karen and, smiling, Aristocrat Charlie excused himself. New Charlie leaned in on Karen's left, but he didn't look at Karen. He was watching Aristocrat Charlie talking to Hula Girl. His attention to them lost. He and Hula Girl were clearly in their own world. You don't remember him. You never do. It's nothing to worry about, obviously. Sounds like there's something you're trying to tell me. Not really. It's more something you want to know, New Charlie volunteered. Karen took a deeper look at New Charlie, wondering where she knew him from. When she looked at his waves of sandy hair and his piercing hazel eyes, they told her none of his secrets. New Charlie was handsome, somewhat athletic-looking, and tall. He smiled at Karen. This time when he did, Karen got chills up her left arm, but not the same sickening sense of danger that she'd felt when he'd smiled at her the last time, which was good, because she had a primo spot at the bar, and as long as her friend the bartender kept the bubble juice flowing, Karen was not moving. "I don't suppose," New Charlie asked, "that you've made a decision yet about your trip, have you?" "Why does everybody keep asking me that?" New Charlie's eyes flashed, and Karen's heart skipped a beat. If her bladder had been even half full, she'd have peed on herself a little. He tilted his head toward her conspiratorially and intimated, "If everyone is asking you, then it's because you asked us to. I know you definitely asked me." Karen narrowed her eyes. New Charlie pressed his palms into the beveled edge of the bar and leaned into it, standing on his toes. He seemed to consider doing a few quick push-ups against it, but didn't. He nodded in the direction of Aristocrat Charlie. "You know," New Charlie confided, "he always kills you." Karen turned to stare the gossiper in the eyes, her face expressionless. "What?" she replied, more of a statement than a question. "That's why you can't remember, and trust me, you don't want to remember all the different things he's done to you," he chuckled, then apologized. I know, I shouldn't make light of all you've been through, and normally I wouldn't, but now that you're here, no need to wear the long face, you know?" "How many times has..." Karen searched for the most appropriate words. "That Charlie over there murdered me." "In all fairness, it isn't always murder," admitted New Charlie, with a casualness something as serious as life and the loss of it didn't deserve. "Comedy doesn't always involve a banana peel." Karen took another look over at Aristocrat Charlie, who was still engaging Hula Girl in deep conversation, only now he wore a grass skirt, too. Island Charlie. His skin looked darker, and, Karen noticed, there was something going on beneath the skin of Island Charlie's naked back. Muscles had formed. Karen treated New Charlie to a scrutinizing look. She guffawed, incredulous. "What do you even mean?" "It's why you can't remember. It's your way of moving on, kind of. Forget and forgive, you know." From Karen's confused look, New Charlie saw that, in fact, Karen didn't know, didn't remember all she'd been to Charlie, all the ways she'd been with him, or all the selves that she had been, and he endeavored, at her request, to remind her. New Charlie spoke. Karen listened with rapt attention. Karen's world of light and sound and color began to swirl into an opaque, murky gray, the rinse dish of a watercolor in progress. The bar, its patrons, and New Charlie's voice faded into scenes. Thank you for joining me for episode 18 of the Afterlife Podcast. Can you believe that? There's only one more episode left to this story. You are listening to Rich Man in the Sky by Otis McDonald. And I am your host, Maximilian Defoe! Visit patreon.com/Maximilian. I'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Twitter, MAXXIMILLIAN. I love you. Thank you for listening. In the sky.